So in my eyes, digital well-being is about mainly about the individual and society, and about how we consciously use technology. Humane technology or ethical technology development, or human-centered design, is about how we design technology and systems to improve humanity or for the sake of humanity. So that's really about the design and the development of the products, whereas digital well-being is about how we then subsequently navigate those products. And the reality is that ethical tech and human-focused technology design actually reaches much further than digital well-being and should impact the way that all technology is developed, whereas digital well-being is more focused.
That was today's guest, Georgie Powell. Georgie, who's the CEO and co-founder of the Space App, has been on the show before, and we're lucky enough to pair her today with Gabby Dubran. He's the co-founder of the Digital Wellness Collective and founder of Happy, an organisation that sheds light on parenting in a digitised landscape. This is a very special show, not just because we have two excellent guests, but also because they tackle the thorny issue of the current state of the global digital wellness landscape. In this episode, we discuss what global digital well-being is exactly, what thought leaders we should be listening to this year, and the technologies doing most for global digital well-being. This is also a great time to tell you about our upcoming Digital Wellness Festival in London on the 3rd and 4th of May this year. For the first time in the UK, this Digital Wellbeing Festival is being held as a place for people all around the world who are committed to digital wellbeing. This event brings together people and companies from around the world to explore current innovation in global digital wellbeing, the latest research and developments in this space, and the companies building products with wellbeing in mind. We're extremely proud of this event, and it will bring together leading thinkers from academia, industry, startups, government, and many, many more. Participants from the likes of Common Sense Media, Oxford Internet Institute, Google, Lightphone, and Good Technology Collective, and many more will come together to make this an unmissable event. Tickets are on sale now, so please come and be a part of the way digital wellbeing will affect our lives in 2019. Okay, let's get on with this show. I hope you enjoy listening to Georgie and Gabby. Gabby and Georgie, welcome to Digital Mindfulness. We're very, very lucky to have you both here with us today. And for my part, I'm very much looking forward to discussing the current state and future of digital wellbeing.
Thanks for having me back.
Yes, it is always a pleasure to be conversing with you, Lawrence.
So let's kick things off for the audience by just telling them, if you would, about yourselves, the companies that you've both founded, and how you came to be working in this amazing space of digital wellbeing.
Sure. So I'm Georgie Powell. I'm the CEO and co-founder of a company called Phone Life Balance, and we have created the Space App, which is one of the leading phone management tools that exist to help people find a healthy relationship with technology. And I am also lucky enough to be working with the lovely Lawrence and Profo on the first ever Digital Wellbeing Festival to be held at the beginning of May in London. We're really excited about the lineup. It's going to be an amazing event. So wearing a couple of hats right now. And I got into digital wellbeing when I became a new mum. I was working at Google at the time, but being a new mum was kind of a change that I needed to realise that my own habits with technology weren't always making me feel great. And that's why I started to look for solutions to help me on a path to a healthier relationship with technology.
Yeah, and I'm Gabby Dubran, and I started a nonprofit focused on helping educate parents called HAPPY, which is an acronym, Helping Awesome Parents Parent Intentionally. And really the focus of it, the philosophy behind it, is taking better care of your own well-being, creating good habits for yourself, designing your life in alignment with your values, helping you build meaningful community so that you have the energy to take care of everything else in your life, you know, not even just your kids, but your career, creating more space for making connections with friends and also serving the earth in some way through sort of this larger ripple effect. And the way that I got down this path myself, I am biologically not a parent. I have two nieces that I adore so deeply. And I saw my niece, who at the time was about 1.5 years old, playing with an iPad. And what starts off very innocently is going on YouTube to learn animal sounds and ABCs very quickly turns into sponsored content for toys and candy and chocolate, literal eye candy. And that's at best. Because there are some really dark holes that you can get down in on YouTube, some pernicious content. And so when I found that out, I knew I had to do something about it. Ultimately, I realized that the problem I'm noticing is a symptom of a much larger problem, which is the attention economy. And so it made sense for me to focus on educating parents. By way of that, and going down this path, I got connected to a digital wellness collective. There was an initial petition that went out to create more digital wellness tools for Apple's platform. That started gaining a lot of ground and energy. That's how I got connected to Georgie and many other people who are operating in this space. So it's been a lot of fun kind of figuring out how to turn all of this energy into something productive that moves the space forward.
Great stuff. So I think a very good place for us to start is just by clarifying what you mean when you talk of digital well-being, because it's such a vague and imprecise term that I think a lot of people have a lot of very different ideas when we use it. So yeah, I wonder if we could just start there.
I think it's one of these things that's traditionally been very hard to define, and we're still, in some ways figuring it out. But I did come across a really good definition that I would like to share. If I were to create a dictionary definition, this is the one that resonated the most deeply with me. The definition is a way of life while using technology that promotes optimal health and well-being, in which body, mind, and spirit are integrated by the individual to live more fully within the human, natural, and digital communities. Ideally, it is the optimum state of health and well-being that each individual using technology is capable of achieving. And I think why this one felt so resonant is because it's talking about it really being a way of life while we do engage with technology, and it doesn't separate your human, natural, and digital environments that you are operating within. And the focus here is optimal health and well-being, in which you are integrating your body, mind, and spirit. That for me, if we were to look at the ultimate or utopia scenario of digital wellness, that's I think what we're really striving towards.
I really like that, Gabby. I haven't heard that approach before, but I like the holistic take on it. I think the way I think about digital well-being is perhaps a little bit kind of simpler right now. So if you think about a wheel of well-being, with segments of that wheel being mind, body, relationships, community, financial well-being, I see digital well-being as another segment within that wheel, which is basically around ensuring that the way that we use technology supports and empowers well-being in an individual. It is ultimately the conscious use of technology to defend, support, and empower individuals and humanity. Within all of well-being, there are digital solutions which help with well-being. So for instance, Headspace is a great example of a digital tool that helps with mental well-being. Fitbit might be an example of a digital tool that is really useful for physical well-being. And indeed, there are lots of digital tools that help with digital well-being as well. But for me, it's a very discrete category, which is literally around the relationship with technology and how that makes us feel better. I think at the moment, digital well-being is widely misunderstood, and that's for two reasons. The first is because I think it's generally been spoken to about today as screen time, and it's actually much broader than that. So I think there are six categories that actually exist within digital well-being, being control of technology, so basically how much we're using it, consumption of technology, so what are we actually using it for and how does that usage make us feel? So kind of Jocelyn Brewer terms it digital nutrition. I think that's kind of an element of it. There's the data and privacy part, so basically protecting and understanding our digital identity. access, so ensuring ubiquitous access to all at the right price point and with the right skill set. Digital citizenship, so making sure that the way we interact online is pro-social versus anti-social. And then information, so the access that we have to information through digital channels, making sure that it's open, truthful, and that it ultimately enhances the fabrics of society. So impact on democracy, for instance, would be something to be included in there. So these categories are ones that I've drawn from kind of a variety of different sources, but I think collectively they cover what digital wellbeing means to me.
There are so many themes, as you were just mentioning, that comprise what we think of as digital wellbeing. And this is a global understanding of it. But I think one of the kind of core ideas that runs right through this that everyone, I think, understands is the idea that digital wellbeing is strongly tied to screen time. And I wonder whether you think that this is a helpful or unhelpful place to start the digital wellbeing discussion.
I think it has to, everything has to start somewhere. And so it's fantastic that the conversation has begun. So I do think it's helpful. So long as the conversation continues to evolve and the tools that exist today aren't considered to be kind of the silver bullet to us all suddenly having a healthy relationship with technology. So it's a great first step, but so long as it is recognized as only the first step.
You know, I think one of the things that I like to talk about is how a lot of the tools that we have now are designed for comfort, because comfort is something that you can quantify and measure. You can make products and services out of comfort. And so, you know, I can call a car from my phone, I can order food delivery from my phone, I can connect with my friends from my phone, and I have this perception that I don't really have to leave my comfort zone. And in the case of some of these tools, that we see now, as you know, Georgie mentioned them being a first step, they're providing us with information. And information in and of itself is comfortable. You can consume endless amounts of information and never have to do anything with it. You could be the most well-informed person on the planet and never fail. And the difference is, you know, transformation is a little uncomfortable. And it requires taking that information, figuring out whether or not it serves you in some way, and then integrating it into your life, which isn't as quite a, you know, a clean and easy kind of quick fix process. And so, you know, I think where we want to move more towards is tools that can help us with transformation.
So we've spent the last few minutes trying to unpack what we mean by digital wellbeing. And just to add a bit more complexity to the mix, there are other phrases that have been used to really refer to this area that we're speaking about, things like ethical tech or humane tech, technology for good, mindful tech, etc. And I guess my question is, do you both think that there's an overlap between those phrases I just mentioned and what you just described as digital well-being?
So in my eyes, digital wellbeing is about mainly about the individual and society, and about how we consciously use technology. Humane technology or ethical technology development or human-centered design is about how we design technology and systems to improve humanity or for the sake of humanity. So that's really about the design and the development of the products, whereas digital well-being is about how we then subsequently navigate those products. And the reality is that ethical tech and human-focused technology design actually reaches much further than digital well-being and should impact the way that all technology is developed, whereas digital well-being is more focused.
No, they're definitely all have some level of overlap. I think ethical tech or humane tech is probably the broadest category, just because, you know, I think it's related to the designers creating tools and people advocating for tools that are based in a set of core human values and kind of relates to all forms of technology that we develop from here on out, I believe. You know, I think mindful tech was another one that you mentioned. I think that's related to the designers who are creating the tools to serve the people who are using them. And it also relates to the user themselves, creating a more intentional and reflective relationship with their devices. So I think that one kind of goes both ways. And then, as Georgie mentioned, digital wellness is more so to the individual using these tools as a way of supporting their own well-being.
So given now that this digital well-being discussion is really a global discussion, and everyone who has a smartphone now has access to tools of this kind, what would you say are some of the challenges that people face in 2019 who really want to explore this space further?
So I think the most fundamental challenge is the fact that the business models that underpin technology, being the attentional economy, are not set to change anytime soon. So basically, successful businesses are the ones that are able to harness the greatest attention to either convert it through to advertising dollars or to spend on consumption. And that means that the products that we're using will be consciously designed to keep us hooked so that we can stay within that economy. And until those business models change and there are new ways of thinking about the value of products, it will be very difficult, I think, for users to truly find healthy balance with technology.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. The crux of this issue is the fact that the incentives are completely misaligned with people's well-being. You know, capitalism, both capitalism and technology's incentives are misaligned. Now, you know, with regards to my theory of change and the way that I think about this is, we have to empower people as individuals to take better care of their own well-being so that we can build the demand to shift the incentives away. And, you know, we've already seen this start to happen in our food systems a little bit. There's a reason that we have vegan and vegetarian options at restaurants. I don't think there's Walmart in the UK, but Walmart became the largest distributor of organic food in the world. And really merely because of the fact that it became economically viable for them to do so. And there was demand around it. You know, there's a reason that we have yoga studios cropping up everywhere and, you know, meditation studios. It's because there's enough demand that was built to now support people's well-being by offering these services, these places to take care of themselves. So if we can really empower people to take better care of themselves and those that they love, that will naturally, I believe, create more of the demand to shift the incentives. But yeah, we're in a really difficult place because the incentives are currently misaligned, as Georgie mentioned.
And I think if I can just build on that a bit, Lawrence, don't know if you want to reset again, but I was just going to point, there's something I've become quite aware of recently is that in many cases we kind of presume that technology will continue to develop in a certain type of way and we're just going to have to mitigate our behavior versus that technology in order to be well. And it's actually really crazy because we're designing that technology and we may be on this freight train, but actually we're driving the freight train. And I think part of the movement of change is actually what's coming from the humane tech and ethical tech movement, which is saying, hang on a minute, we have full agency over the tools and subsequent systems that our technology actually creates. And it's time for us to take a big step back on all of that and think not about how we mitigate the impact of technology, but rather what do we want humanity to look like and how do we build technology solutions to enable that vision of humanity? And I think that's another wave that's coming, which is really positive and something that we need to celebrate. I think the other thing that we can also do is use digital wellbeing movement specifically to celebrate how technology already makes our life better as well. So rather than just always mitigating kind of the negative impacts of screen time or data and privacy or mental health through social media, whatever it might be, but actually to celebrate all the great things that social media does to actually bring people together and communities together and to entertain us and to educate us and to move us forward as a society. And there's a big place in the digital wellbeing movement for that.
I think you're absolutely spot on. There is a lot of noise at the moment and a lot of criticism directed towards the technology companies and the technologies that they produce. But even though there was a massive wave of techno-optimism around the, you know, around 2007, etc., I don't think that we collectively give enough appreciation for just how much this technology has improved the quality of our lives. So yeah, Georgie, I think you're spot on there.
Yeah, it's definitely been wrapped up in this sort of tech lash movement, which comes alongside issues of competition and monopolies and control and all this stuff. But having said that, I don't think we can, whilst we also have to celebrate the positive, I think the sort of the tech lash part around taking responsibility for the impact you have on your users, we can't just let them off the hook. There is a lot more that needs to be done there. And we talked about how screen time tools are a great first step. But you know, I was just looking today again at what is actually live on Facebook from a digital wellbeing perspective. They have an online wellbeing page. And there's two things on there. There's a very short kind of link and for suicide prevention. And there's a very short paragraph on social resolution, they call it. And that's it. And they have billions of users around the world which are being impacted by their service. I mean, there's so much more that needs to be done and can be done. But no, I think celebrating a lot of the positive stuff that platforms like Facebook are also enabling is definitely part of the story.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we absolutely, going back to ethical tech and, you know, even like the ethical OS framework that was built, I think we can design things in a way to not only mitigate unintended consequences, but actually create closed loop systems that result in cascading benefits. You know, just going back, you know, this is just like a fun fact in terms of like an unintended benefit of technology. The washing machine is actually responsible for the largest rise in women's literacy in human history. So, you know, not one of the things that people necessarily think about as an unintended benefit of technology, but really in some ways may have transformed everything, you know. So, you know, it's only we kind of like look back in hindsight and realize some of these things.
We've been talking at a pretty high level about digital well-being and what it means to the pair of you and kind of what it might mean to society. But I think what's also important to think about are the different groups of people or different organizations that are involved in bringing these ideas that we're talking about to fruition. One example that I'm thinking of is government actors, such as the European Union, for example, when they enacted GDPR, which feeds really strongly into this idea of digital well-being insofar as data security and privacy protection. So I wonder if you can just share with us what different stakeholder groups you think are important to include in this digital well-being discussion so that we have the desired global social effects.
I think given that, you know, I'm working in the not-for-profit space, I think philanthropy plays a huge role in it. You know, we, you know, I'm born and raised in Silicon Valley, and we have, you know, mass amounts of wealth that have been created in this area. And, you know, people want to give philanthropically and they want to know that they're making a difference. And the thing that's a little bit difficult is when it comes to social change, it's an inherently kind of uncertain thing. But there is plenty of wealth that people want to direct towards something that they know is going to make a difference. And I think in part what we need to work together in doing and work collectively on is how do we make it easy for them to understand why it makes sense to invest in this work that we're doing. So I think that's a big part of it. I'm really excited about all the things that are happening in Europe. You're definitely a lot further ahead, you know, not only in terms of awareness, but in actually policy and taking action on it. You know, I think it takes the entrepreneurs, not only people creating technology, but the people creating non-tech solutions to help people in the space, and education. It takes lots of education, bringing it not only through online channels, but to the schools themselves.
Yeah, and then I would also add to that. So obviously the research that's happening in universities around the world into kind of the impact of technology. And the challenge with that always is that technology is evolving so quickly, it's quite difficult for research to almost keep pace with the rate of technology change, but it is still very important and it is informing policy as well. And then beyond the digital wellbeing kind of startup community or emerging industry that we're both part of, or we're all part of rather, I actually think new business models coming out of tech startups generally is also really interesting and really important, because any of those businesses have the potential to break the way that kind of technology currently operates. So what if there was a new social network where advertisers placed value in how happy the users were feeling rather than how much time they spent on the platforms? What if there was a new interface for users which showed that at any point of using the internet how hackable you were at that moment, i.e. how much data you were exchanging in terms of the services that you were bringing back? You know, what kind of startup from what industry? Is that a fintech business that's going to bring that kind of capability into the tech world? So I think that sector also has a huge role to play in the future of digital wellbeing.
So we've just been speaking about all of these different stakeholder groups who we should be including in any digital wellbeing discussion. Who would you say are the other important voices that we should be thinking about, or who we can focus on in 2019 to shed more light on digital wellbeing?
I should just say, and I don't know where this fits, maybe this fits back in a previous answer, but I think we should commend Google for what they've done with digital wellbeing, because we would never have used this term a year ago. And now we use the term like, you know, we all know what digital wellbeing is, but actually they brought that term to the mainstream. So we really need to recognize that. I also wanted to mention at some point, I just saw today that TikTok, which is the kind of the fastest growing short form mobile video sharing platform in the world, they're getting like, they have more installs per day than Facebook, have actually just launched a series of online safety videos, privacy controls and digital wellbeing videos within the product, which are front and center rather than hidden in the settings, which explain to their users how using this technology might actually impact their digital wellbeing, which I thought was really interesting. You know, putting it into video format rather than keeping it in hidden text really kind of puts a new emphasis on it. And so I'm interested to see how these kind of challenger businesses are actually putting more pressure on kind of the tech, the big players to really take this stuff seriously. In terms of literature, I am a massive Harari, just like fangirl. He is a total genius. And I think this kind of this emerging set of literature all around what is humanity and what does it mean to be human, and then how does technology impact that, impact the evolution of being human, is so, so cool. And Douglas Rushkoff has a lot to say about that as well, as does Klaus Schwabe, who is the founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum. He talks about the fourth industrial revolution and how basically you've got to be really careful because we're creating tools that will go on to create more tools themselves that we don't even know what they're going to do. He's just really passionate and really fascinating. So they're the guys that I'm currently really tripping out about. But I also think this whole wave of literature around the attention economy is also really interesting and something that I think about a lot in my daily life. So from that perspective, the work that James Williams done and Cal Newport on, you know, these ideas of owning your own attention and creating digital minimalism in your life.
From the thought leader historian side of things, like I completely agree on that front. You know, in terms of the people who are, you know, doing the work on the ground, you know, a fellow friend of all of ours, Fred Stutzman, and the work he's been doing at Freedom, you know, he's been in the space since 2011. Andrew Dunn from Ciempo, they're actually getting ready to launch a massive crowd equity campaign, and they're moving towards more of a model where they're essentially open sourcing Ciempo's technology and empowering developers to create new tools that serve different markets through the platform, which I think is really exciting and one of the actual biggest innovations in digital wellness that I'm excited about for this year. You know, there's like people who are more involved in corporate consulting. You have like the Unplug HQ guys in Ireland, Chris Flack and Aidan Healy. You have people more involved in education, not only for youth, there's people who are doing education for elders. So I think as you're looking to each different category, there's someone who's kind of taken charge and leading the front in that space, you know. And I would look to so many of the people on the Digital Wellness Collective in the community and on the core team to learn a bit more about what's going on.
So we've been talking about and clarifying these different terms: ethical tech, mindful tech, tech for good, etc. But my question is, can you attain digital well-being in the way that we've been describing it if the tools that we're using are not considered humane or are not considered to be technology for good?
It's one of these things where, you know, going back to what Georgie and I were saying about how the core of the issue is the fact that these incentives are completely misaligned. I would say you can, and it's also very difficult to do so because the cards are kind of stacked against you. It's not designed to serve you in becoming the best version of yourself. That's not to say that you can't have agency in working towards being the best version of yourself and use those tools in an effective way. I would say the people that are the best off, in spite of the inhumane tools, they've built a strong foundation of positive habits, routines, you know, mornings and night routines. They have a strong sense of in-person community, which is becoming really increasingly difficult because we are so isolated in the work that we're doing. But yeah, I think it's exceptionally difficult because we find that a lot of people who are on this journey of being the best version of themselves often want to start new ventures. And that can feel pretty isolating and alone, or lonely rather. And they not only have to use these tools for their professional life, but in some sense to stay connected in their personal lives as well. And so that's why I think it is so difficult, but it is possible. I believe that.
I think of it a bit like food. So, you know, if the only food on offer was fast food, then we'd all get pretty unhealthy pretty quickly. And maybe we've been in that kind of like fast food landscape for the last few years, and lots of people are starting to realize that now. And so there are more healthy choices on the option, on the menu. And so we can pick and choose, and it's okay to have balance in that way. So long as we are educated enough to understand where we're getting the good stuff and where perhaps we're kind of being a little bit naughty. And dining out. And so I think that's kind of the landscape which we're currently in.
So now to end this show on a positive note, what are you both looking forward to in terms of the digital wellness landscape in 2019?
So personally, I'm looking forward to experiencing being at the Digital Wellness Festival in the UK, March 3rd and 4th. Like, to give you a plug, Lawrence, I'm so excited that you're doing that. And I'm excited for Digital Wellness Collective to be involved in some capacity, and bring as many of these lovely people that I've built community with in the global sense, in physical space with one another. I think that's really important, and it helps build that deeper, more meaningful connection where even if I don't see you or talk to you for a few months, we still have each other's back. And that is so important. In terms of other things I'm excited about, you know, I think with Center for Humane Technology, they've done an amazing job of building awareness and making a bigger megaphone for this. And they drummed up a lot of energy, and it was kind of a situation where it's like, how do we channel all of this energy? You know, these thousands of volunteers who signed up to help in some capacity. And I'm excited because they hired a head of community, who is really working towards, aligning, a lot of this, these resources that we now have, and channeling this energy in a way that's going to create the most impact. And I'm excited to see what happens when you know, I think the last couple of years we've kind of been operating as this amoeba, kind of moving generally in the same direction, but not in a very direct or efficient way. I'm excited to see what happens now that all of the people who are focusing on this complex set of issues are now communicating with one another and channeling effectively. And I think we'll start to see that over the course of this year, which I'm excited about.
I'm very excited generally about in a very uncool fashion about the emergence of this entire industry. I think this year we're going to see a lot more clarification and understanding generally about digital well-being and recognition that, I'm going to repeat because I just was scraping my chair across the floor and that's going to kill the background. So I'm really excited about this year generally because I think we're going to start to see a lot more clarification and understanding about digital well-being and what it means and recognition that the way we use technology is as important as what we feed ourselves or how we move or how we nurture our relationships and our communities. And I think more and more people will start to get that. I'm interested to see more of how the social networks start to respond to this increasing pressure around mental health and their responsibility, particularly for teenagers, and what they can do with their products to make sure they're actually supporting the people that need it rather than basically recognizing when people are in situations of, I'm looking forward to seeing what social media platforms will do to help support mental health. And I'm also really interested to see if there is a wave that also starts to build from kind of the ground up a little bit around, like it was around screen time, around our data and where it goes and how the data that we give over is subsequently then used to influence the decisions and choices that we make in our daily life. This term hackability, so I think Harari sort of coined it, it's not about whether or not an everyday hacker can get into your computer. It's about how the services that we use every day know more about us than we perhaps know about ourselves and how they then use that to manipulate our decisions. And I think more and more people will start to be aware of that. And I'm really interested to see what the changes might be as a consequence of that growing awareness.
Well, thanks so much to the both of you. That was really great. Where can people find out more about you and your companies and connect with you?
Sure. So you can reach out to me, georgie@space-app.com, or read my blog, follow my blog on findyourphonelifebalance.com. And I look forward to hearing from you. Oh, see you at the festival.
And you can find out a little bit more about the work I'm doing with Happy at happy.org, HAPPI.org. And, I think where I'm investing a lot of time and energy right now is in Digital Wellness Collective, because we have a leadership team that we can collaborate and work with. And there's definitely a lot of energy behind what's going on right now. You know, this group has grown to about 90 professionals and organizations that are working collaboratively to enhance human relationships by supporting the intentional use and development of technology. So if you want to find out more about that, go to digitalwellnesscollective.com. Feel free to reach out to us. We are very responsive people. I look forward to connecting with those of you that want to get deeper into this work.
Well, Gabby and Georgie, it's been a complete pleasure having you on the Digital Mindfulness Show. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing you on the 3rd of May, and best of luck with Space, Happy, and the Digital Wellness Collective.
Thanks so much, Lawrence.
Thank you, Lawrence. See you soon.